Welcome one and all. You're listening to Learn Japanese Pod, and this is the Fun Friday edition of the podcast. And if you didn't know, the Fun Friday edition of the podcast is where we temporarily put away our textbooks and our word tanks and our flashcards.
Put them away, people.
Put them away, people. And we talk to cool people doing cool things in Japan. And this episode is no exception, because I am joined by Brother Ben.
It is I.
Hello, Ben. How are you?
Good.
Ben, if you didn't know, Ben is my brother.
Most days.
Most days. Yeah, my long-suffering brother. Ben actually lives in Kyoto. I live in Tokyo.
Tokyo's not big enough for the both of us.
It's not. That's why we live in different cities. And Ben is up for a visit. So we're hanging out. We're drinking delicious wine.
I'm up in the big Kyo today.
You certainly are.
The East Kyo. The East capital, Tokyo.
What do I owe the honour of this visit to? Why are you up here in Tokyo?
It's a busman's holiday. It's a summer break. I'm going up to Tohoku and Hokkaido for a road trip up to Tohoku and Hokkaido this week.
Oh, nice, yeah, nice.
For about a week, so.
And what are you going to be
I'm
doing?
I'm going to tour the shore and see if I can. Yeah, I think we're going to go past the. I've never been up to Radiation Land.
You mean Fukushima?
Yeah, yeah. So right. I think they have like they still have like you know signs on the road with mini servants and stuff and all that kind. So that'd be kind of interesting to see. And
sin pics would be interesting to see. Are you going to be hiking or what?
No, it's mostly a road trip. So I'm going with a friend.
Nice.
Yeah, we're just going to visit. I think we're going to Sendai, Morioka, then up to Hakodate in Hokkaido, and back again.
Oh, awesome. So you're going to be hanging out with our friend Steve.
Yeah.
You're doing a road trip.
Yeah.
And where are you going to be in Hokkaido?
My friend's visiting some shops. I think Hakodate.
Oh, cool.
And possibly maybe Sapporo as well, the capital of Hokkaido, if you will.
I will. I absolutely will. Have you been to Hakodate before?
Yeah, Hakodate is really nice. Really nice place to visit. It's kind of a small town on the southern tip of Hokkaido. And actually, central Hokkaido wasn't really occupied by the Japanese until kind of really the central era, not until the 1800s.
Oh,
but
really?
Hakodate on the southern tip has a long history. The Japanese were there for, you know, luckily. But Sapporo's relatively new town. Hmm. And Sapporo's kind of a grid. And it's a grid because when they're building it back in the 1800s, they got in American town planners who said to them, and probably I'm guessing from Chicago or New York, from some such like gritty place, and they said, "What you guys need is a grid." And generally, that's a great idea. So, Sapporo is, I think, designed by American town planners. Yeah,
that's interesting. And it does.
The other interesting thing with Hokkaido, a lot of the place names are Ainu, the indigenous inhabitants of Hokkaido. So, some of the places sound. Un-Japanese, I'd say, yeah.
Yeah, so the Ainu are the indigenous people who live in Hokkaido.
Yeah.
And I'm sure this is completely unrelated, but some of their art and their clothes kind of remind me a little bit of Native American art, although it's a spurious link, I think.
Yeah, I think the art's really nice, and they do kind of it's very attractive art, and it's I think they're linked to Siberian peoples.
There's a kind of a genetic link there.
Yeah, genetic and cultural. Yeah,
And I've got a question for you. Does Hokkaido have a rainy season?
No, sir. We're kind of sweaty and being rained on down here in central Japan, but yes, Hokkaido. We're gonna escape the rainy season up in Hokkaido.
I'm so jealous. I should have gone with you. Damn it! Why didn't I plan this? That sounds fantastic. Well, I am thoroughly jealous, Brother Ben.
Tohoku Hokkaido road trip is... Actually, I've never been to Tohoku before, so I'm really looking forward to seeing Sendai. And have you heard about Morioka? Apparently it's like a really nice place. There's a survey recently saying it's like one of the top places to live in Japan.
Yeah.
Do you know why?
I don't know why, but I imagine it's very beautiful. There's lots of space. Everything's cheap and healthy, and there's no pollution.
Yeah,
you can. I think
it's got some nice old bits of town as well, like nice old architecture and stuff.
I kind of get the feeling that Morioka is the kind of prefecture where you can live the good life.
How dare you? It's not a prefecture. It's a town. Sorry.
Yeah. Morioka is the capital of Iwate.
Iwate. Yeah.
Iwate Ken. Sorry. I apologize, Japan. I'm sorry. I missed
Stonehand Prefecture.
Stonehand Prefecture. I'm sorry.
So this town's called Morioka, so big pile of hills.
Or abundant hill, okay. I think, is it is the capital city of Iwate Prefecture, located in the Tohoku region of northern Japan. It has an estimated population of 290,000.
Well, it's small. It's very small.
It's tiny. I just did a random Google search here, and I'm looking at the South China Morning Post for some reason, and they have a blog post titled "Morioka, the trending Japanese tourist destination you've probably never heard of, is a sleepy city in Iwate Prefecture." If you're from Morioka, I apologize on their behalf. How dare they call it sleepy?
There's a bit of a contradiction. It's trending and it's sleepy. Can you be trending and sleepy?
Maybe. You're quite trendy and sleepy.
That's the nicest thing you've ever said to me, I think.
Like I said, my long-suffering brother. The New York Times chose Morioka in Iwate Prefecture, Japan, as the second best place to visit in the world.
In the world?
In 2023, surprising local tourism officials.
Hold on, what year is it? It's 23.
It's 2023. So it's still
I'm going to the second best place in the world. I'm a little skeptical.
Well, what's the best place in the world?
Yeah.
I'm guessing it's Evanston in Chicago, but who knows? Anyway, the city 2 hours from Tokyo with its tradition. It's 2 hours from Tokyo?
On the Shinkansen?
On the Shinkansen by the bullet train?
No, it's a good few hours drive.
With its traditional buildings and three famous noodle dishes.
Hold on, are we talking soba or udon here?
I think we're going to find out. Has seen bookings increase since the article came out. Okay, so it looks pretty nice. Oh, that's pretty beautiful. No,
yes, we were looking at a very nice picture of kind of modern buildings, but with a beautiful mountain backdrop.
And become a subscriber to access this article. And changing topics.
That's the end. That's the end of my.
That's the end of your Morioka. Hey, listen. Suffice it to say, Ben, please send pictures.
Yes, sure.
I shall post them on our Discord channel to our lovely members. It's interesting you said that you don't really know much about Hokkaido and Tohoku.
Well, no, I've been to Hokkaido a few times. I've never been to Tohoku before.
Me neither. I consider myself very well traveled in Japan from. Basically, Tokyo
southwards.
Yeah, due west and south. I've been all the way down to Okinawa and everywhere in between. And unfortunately, I don't know why, I just never made it up to Tohoku.
You're not a very northerly person.
I'm not a very northerly person. You know nothing, Jon Snow. I'm sorry. Oh, dear. Haven't made it up to Tohoku, to my shame, and I'd love to do that because At-chan, she went up there to Tohoku. She had a grand old time.
Well, hold on. Where's she from?
She's from Shizuoka.
Oh, okay, good.
So that's just south of Tokyo. But she went up to Tohoku. I think it was for a business trip with her colleagues, and she went and saw the Namahage.
The raw bald person.
No, the Namahage is a... traditional festival that's held in towns in Tohoku, and it basically consists of the townsmen dressing up in these amazing masks and frightening the daylights out of the young kids.
Is it a Shinto thing?
I think so, maybe.
Okay.
I'm sure it has. It seems like a very animistic Shinto type. I may be completely wrong. Please check it on Wikipedia, dear listener.
But so, and when is this held?
Every year during the winter.
Winter festival. Okay.
And the hilarious thing is they don these amazing the costumes are really beautiful.
Oh, I think I've seen it. It's very shamanistic.
Yeah, very shamanistic. And they've got these like really beautifully carved masks, and they look really cool. And they go around frightening the children. They go house to house in the village, frightening the children. Mm. And the funny thing is, as they go, they're offered sake by the
households,
and they slowly get more and more
drunk, and probably more and more frightening.
So look up Namahage on YouTube. It's an amazing festival. I really want to go and check it out. And Asuka,
I've never heard of it, and I've lived in Japan for 300 years.
It's amazing.
Okay,
and
cool.
I regret not seeing it yet. Mm. So I'd love to go up and check it out. But yeah, Tohoku is it's an unknown country to me. And I don't know why I never made it up there. I'd love to go.
I'm going on your behalf.
Please go on my behalf. Can you be our ambassador for Learn Japanese Pod?
I'm like a pioneer from southern Japan up to the north.
Pioneer used in a special sense that it's usually used for people who have done something that no one else has ever done before. Apart from the fact that people have been living in Tohoku for
thousands of years.
Send pics.
Yes.
But, dear listener, we're not here to talk about Tohoku. Oh no, sir. We're not here to talk about Hokkaido.
We're going a whole way south.
We're going all the way south to Kyoto, because Ben is a resident of Kyoto. Actually, how long have you lived in Kyoto?
I think it's 5 years now.
Is it 5 years now?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Tell our listeners.
I'm an exile from Tokyo.
You're an exile from Tokyo. That's quite true. But all is forgiven. You can come back if you want. But the reason that I wanted to invite Ben on the podcast, apart from him happening to be here in Tokyo, is that Ben, his secret ninja vocation is being a tour guide in Kyoto.
Yes, sir.
So I was going to say, are you an English teacher? No.
No, sir.
Are you a headhunter?
No, sir.
What possible reason could you have to live in Japan if you weren't doing those two jobs?
Well, yes, I've kind of found the vocation of being a tour guide,
which is amazing. Like, so Ben, my dear brother, is a tour guide in Kyoto. How cool is that? You've had a bumpy history, an up and down history. You've had a checkered history as a tour guide.
No, I've had a great history as a tour guide.
But you started and then it stopped it started again.
Yes. Well, yes, I started doing touring about a year and a half before the pandemic. Initially I was doing bicycle tours in Kyoto, and then I switched to another kind of gig doing walking tours. Did that for a few months and then had a 3-year break for the wonderful, beautiful Corona pandemic, of which there were, we had no tourists for 3 years. And we just started last October again. And Japan gave very, very short notice about lifting restrictions. So I got a call from the company I work with saying, I think back in October, so can you do a tour? I was like, yeah, sure. And the first tour there was one person. But the numbers are back. The average group I do now is about 15 people, 15 to 20 people maybe. But yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah. And so, pandemic aside, you've been a tour guide for a few years now.
Yes, yeah.
And what are your tours like? If I went on your tour, what kind of stuff are you showing them?
We're doing two tours at the moment. One is basically the east side of Kyoto.
Mm.
There's an area called Higashiyama, which means East Mountain, because it's on the east side of Kyoto. and it starts climbing up a hill to a very famous temple called Kiyomizu Temple, which is one of the most famous temples in Kyoto and very, very famous in all of Japan as well. So that's a kind of 3-hour walking tour, basically in Higashiyama, which is the east area, and then ending at Kiyomizu Temple. And we also do a night tour, which is about a two-hour walk, walking around Gion, and it's all about the Maiko and Geiko culture. Now,
let me stop you there. Where and what is Gion? What is a Geiko? And what is a Geisha and a Maiko?
Yeah. So Kyoto has got 5 flower towns. And flower town is not referring to the vegetation. It's referring to, flower town is referring to the beautiful Maiko and Geiko, the entertaining ladies of Kyoto. Now, most people are probably more familiar with the word geisha. Geisha is the Tokyo word. Gei means art and sha means person. So person of art, geisha in Tokyo. But actually they originate in Kyoto. And in Kyoto, the Kyoto word for them is not geisha. The Kyoto word is geiko. So gei, again, art, and ko is lady. Lady of art. Okay. And there's also a thing called a maiko. A maiko is the trainee geiko. She's a teenager, usually aged from about 16 to 20 or 21. Many people are familiar with them because they have the face painted bright white. That's a maiko, yeah. So
that's interesting. Wow. And Gion is the
Gion is one of the 5 flower towns. Actually, technically, Gion technically has 2 flower towns. But yeah, it's Gion is like the biggest flower town. And that's the areas where the kind of geiko and maiko operate. They do performances of traditional dances, playing traditional instruments and traditional singing.
That's amazing. And
that's where they do their performances. Yeah.
Well, I'm learning so much. I didn't know there was such a thing as a flower town, and flowers relate to
in Japanese, hanamachi.
Hanamachi.
Yeah, flower town, yeah.
And those 5 hanamachi are within Kyoto City or Kyoto Fu?
No, yeah, all 5 are within Kyoto City. And basically 4 of them, they're so close together. To my mind, it's one area. Yeah. But ask a Kyoto person and they're 4 very distinct, separate areas in the mind of a Kyoto person. And there's also one kind of up in the north area of Kyoto as well.
That's called interesting.
Kamishichi-ken.
That's really amazing. This reminds me of a negative story, which is you sometimes see tourists harassing geikos and maikos to try and get a selfie with them.
I'm careful to tell my customers, you know, we shouldn't take pictures of them as they're walking down the street. You know, they're kind of private individuals, and you know, you wouldn't want to be photographed by strangers in the street. And we shouldn't really hassle them. And there's a famous street in Gion called Hanami Koji Machi, and they've got signs up all over the place now saying no photographs, $200 fine for taking a picture. Because before the pandemic, there was sometimes instance where groups of tourists would mob the maiko walking down the street, even pulling their clothes and like shoving cameras in their face and chasing them down the street. So you know, it's an old traditional thing. We should respect them and not kind of get in their face. You know? It's fine to look at them, but you shouldn't hassle them.
I guess there's another kind of more philosophical thing where it's like, can you just enjoy the moment without a phone?
Yes, right?
Is quite zen, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, it's easy for me because you know I live in Kyoto. I do this kind of tour, you know, a few times a week, and we often see Geiko Maiko walking down the street. But you know, I understand for tourists, it's kind of an amazing bit of Japanese culture that survives from the 1700s. You know, people only come, you know, you're only going to come to Japan maybe once in your life, or once every 10 years maybe. And I get that people are excited, but
you have to respect the individual, right? Yeah. This kind of leads me on to the topic of tourist behavior in Kyoto. It seems that the underlying issue is that Kyoto is such an amazing place to visit. It's incredibly popular, and because it's popular, there's a large volume of tourists, and that causes problems because you have local...
some minor problems, yeah. I mean, sometimes when you're with a big crowd and they're blocking the road, that can upset the locals, that kind of thing. So, you know, you have to kind of be aware of your surroundings and make sure we're not getting in the way of people, that kind of thing. Yeah. One very interesting cultural thing. One thing that tourists are often aware of, they're often aware of the you know, in Japan, generally you don't eat while walking.
Yes.
Almost every tour, people are always like, you know, should I eat and walk? And I say, I wouldn't worry about it so much. It's not such a big deal. I mean, and you sometimes see Japanese people eating and walking. I would say a much bigger thing is sitting down and leaning on stuff.
Don't now, sit down and lean on stuff.
Well,
okay.
This is really interesting. When you live in Japan, I think they have kind of much, how can I say this, clearer, not clearer, more sharply defined boundaries about different behaviors in different places. I think generally on the street, Japanese people will remain standing up.
Yes.
And one observation that a lot of tourists make when they come to Japan, they say, why are there no benches here? There's very few places to sit down. And on my tours, I kind of have to warn people, don't lean on walls. And this is no criticism of foreigners, I'm one myself, but whenever there's anything that's vaguely at bum height, everyone in my group will try and park their bum on it.
Right.
And that's something Japanese people never do outside a restaurant or a cafe. And when you walk around these tourist places, you'll see people sitting on steps, which Japanese people never do. If there's a fence, they'll sit on the fence. If there's a building, they'll lean against it. So, you know, it's very natural for us as Westerners to do that. But for Japanese people... no.
actually, I learned this lesson the hard way many, many, many years ago when I was new to Japan. I was visiting Meiji Jingu Shrine in...
Central Tokyo, yeah.
Central Tokyo in Omote Sando. Mm-hmm. And I sat down...
Oh, on the steps.
On the steps near main gateway. And one of the guards came over and told me off. Mm-hmm. He was really pissed off. It was kind of like I'd walked on the Japanese flag and burned it in front of everyone.
Yeah,
it was really well known. And I think the sensibility is like, hey, listen, you're in a national shrine. Stand up, tourist.
Yeah, I think in the West there's like no disrespect in sitting down, but I think there's to some degree like it's in Japanese culture. I feel sitting down is kind of... it's being slightly less respectful.
I think maybe it comes off as being lazy.
Yes.
I've seen that before. That's interesting. So going back to Kyoto and your tours, what are some lesser known hidden gems in Kyoto that tourists might overlook?
Well, blimey. Well, before I get to that, I think one interesting thing to say, quite often people say like, where can I go that's not touristy in Kyoto?
Yeah.
But I think these aren't mutually exclusive categories. Mm. So some of the very touristy places are worth seeing. And some of them are very crowded and still worth seeing.
Right.
I mean, okay, if you absolutely hate crowds, understandable, but you're going to kind of miss some of the major sites. So, for example, Fushimi Inari Shrine, the Shrine of the Fox God, is incredibly crowded at the bottom. Kiyomizu Temple is very, very crowded, but again, it's a very beautiful temple. So I'd kind of say you have to... you know, as a tourist, you kind of have to see the major tourist things, and they're worth seeing, but they're very crowded.
I would like to second that. Fushimi Inari Shrine, Kiyomizu Dera, Temple.
Even the bamboo forest on the west side of Kyoto, the problem with the bamboo forest, like, you know, as a tourist, you have to, you kind of have to see it because it's so famous. You can't go home and say, I've been to Kyoto and haven't seen the bamboo forest. The problem is, there are two problems with it. Number one, it's incredibly crowded. Number two, it's a bit short. You know, it's beautiful, but it's about 10 minutes of walking.
It's not. And actually, perhaps because it's short, it's popular.
Maybe.
Because if you're, like most tourist destinations in Japan, if you go anywhere slightly natural, if you walk
10 minutes out of the car park and there's no people, yeah.
It's like, yeah, you just walk like 10 minutes up a hill and you'll find yourself by yourself with maybe a wild boar and a hawk flying through the sky, and there's like no one there.
Sure.
Tourists tend to be very lazy. I include myself there. I'm a lazy tourist. But if you can get off the
beaten path, you're a very lazy tourist.
I'm a very lazy tourist.
You haven't even been up to Tohoku yet.
I'm sorry, Japan. Moshiwaki gozaimasen. So that's really interesting. So like, where are the places that tourists don't go to? No. Go to some of the crowded places.
Yeah, they're worth seeing despite, if you can hack the crowds, you know, so the famous tourist places are worth seeing, I would say.
Are there any places that most people haven't heard of that you would recommend seeing?
North of Kyoto, there's a small village called Ohara, and there's a very beautiful temple there called Sanzenin. There's also a nice temple there called Jako Inn, which I think had the first female Japanese Buddhist nuns in Japan, which is all very nice. And those two tend to not be so crowded because they're a good bus ride out of Kyoto into the countryside a little bit to the small town. Yes, there's a vast amount of smaller temples which are beautiful and not so crowded.
You're definitely spoilt for choice if you want to venture
further
afield.
Yeah, well, it's worth investing some time doing some research. And again, you know, one danger is that you can easily get templed out. And I'd recommend, you know, not doing too much temple, because after a few days they begin to kind of blend into each other and you can't really remember them. But
I remember that, like, when I first came to Japan and I went to Kyoto for the very first time, and I was with some, you know, my uni mates, and we went a bit nuts on the first day and we got templed out. You know, we decided to see like seven different temples or something.
Yeah,
and it was just at the end
of
the day.
It's just too much.
It's just too much.
I think probably two a day is like enough.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Go see the major temple and maybe a lesser known temple as well.
Yeah. I mean, this isn't really lesser well known, but in the northwest of Kyoto, there's a very famous temple. It's a major tourist attraction called Kinkakuji, Golden Pavilion. But next to that, there's one of my favorite ones called Ryoanji, and that's the kind of ultimate. It's called Kare Sansui, dry Japanese garden. It's the one with the rocks and the gravel. I mean, you know, there are lots of one, but that's kind of really special, that one. But it's very, very
It's one of my favorite places in Kyoto. And some people say, why do you like Ryoanji? It's a bunch of rocks.
So often people say, like, I went there, but it didn't have any plants. Is that really a garden? I'm like, well, yes, it's a dry Japanese garden.
I think what's the word? It's not spectacular like the Leaning Tower of Pisa, but it's really beautiful. And as you just said,
part of the beauty is the understatement,
the wabi sabi. But when you go there, you do feel this, as you said, this feeling of great. It's fantastic.
It's got some history to it, and it's got some kind of depth to it for sure. Yeah.
And there's this whole, if you look into like the placement of the rocks and what it all means, it's very,
yeah,
very
there are whole books written on it, you know. But yeah, it's a nice place to experience. So Ryoanji is a good one.
I highly recommend
although that's not really, that's a fairly famous one.
No, that's great.
One quick one for maybe a nice one for rainy season. There's a quite famous temple called Nanzenji, which is a nice place to visit. But just close to there, there's a nice Japanese garden called Murin An. And Murin An, it was actually started as an English garden. That was a plan for it. And one very interesting thing I didn't know about moss, I always assumed that like moss was kind of quite difficult to grow, you know, needed some energy. But what happened to Murin An was like the moss kind of, actually moss is very pervasive in Japan. It grows on its own. I don't know if you'd describe it as aggressive, but you know, just moss just kind of happens on its own. And although they're planning this English garden, the moss kind of took over. So it kind of more like reverted to Japanese garden and they kind of went with it. But the thing I like about Murin An, it's kind of small, but what I like about it is it's a rain garden. Very nice for rainy season. It's supposed to be best when it rains. I mean, you know, all Japanese gardens are kind of like, you know, Japanese always gone about how Japan has four different seasons, you know, and you haven't really been to a garden unless you've been to it in all four seasons. But the thing I like about Murin, it's a rain garden and they've got this very nice tea house. So when it's raining, you can sit there and you can buy, you know, a cup of green tea with some mochi and watch the rain fall down in this kind of nice mossy garden. So it's wow. Small, it's small, but very, very charming.
And what's that called again?
Murin An.
Murin An. Okay, I'll definitely...
An means like hermitage or something. And actually it was a copy of one, I think, built in like Yamaguchi or something back in the day. Yeah, it's got a kind of complicated history. But yeah, that's a small one that's not so well known. And... next door to that, there's a very famous Japanese restaurant called Hyote. And I think the Hyo is the same for Hyo in Hyotan. Hyotan means gourd. And they have a picture of a gourd on the place. And that restaurant is claimed to be 400 years old. I think the cheapest thing you can eat there is breakfast for like $60. And the more expensive breakfast there is $150. But it's, you know, so... next to that very nice old garden, you've got this 400-year-old restaurant, which is called Hyote, which is pretty cool.
We need to go have breakfast there one of these days.
Yeah, yeah.
Just about your comment about moss, I have a little garden out back there, and moss just will grow everywhere.
I think I got the idea that moss was difficult. I remember like back in the UK watching people trying to create and they were like they're pouring yogurt in their garden to try and like cultivate moss, and it in the UK it seems like it requires some effort, but in the kind of humid, very wet environment of Japan, it just grows naturally. So that's why, you know, there's so many moss gardens in Japan. It just occurs naturally.
Well, what you need, it's warmth, moisture, and shade. So the moss tends to grow in bamboo groves,
right?
In plants. So I've got some plants outside, and the ones with big leaves where it's quite dark and it's warm and it's moist, the moss just grows naturally.
Right.
No putting.
How many kinds of moss are there?
57.
Yeah, there were lots.
You know, there's a moss otaku somewhere in Japan who knows the names of all the different kinds of moss.
Yeah, sometimes you go to places and they have little, like, samples with all the... It's kind of fascinating and very, very nerdy. Yeah, for garden nerds, yeah. One day I'll learn the 58 different names for the 2,000 different kinds of Japanese moss. used to be a bioluminescent kind of moss in Japan which glowed. Unfortunately, it's incredibly sensitive to modern pollution, and I don't think anyone's seen it in Japan for the last 50 years, sadly.
Ah, that's a shame. Oh well. Moss aside, when's the best time to visit Kyoto?
Winter, you know, generally speaking, winter Japan is nice. You know, I'm from, compared to the UK, UK's a bit grey and grim and dark and drizzly in winter. Japanese winter is quite nice in that you have a lot of bright, sunny days. So it's quite, you know, it's quite nice feeling. But basically, the best times are spring and winter. If you come in kind of, well, actually, you know, the cherry blossom season is kind of getting earlier and earlier every year. One of the problems for my customers, when I'm doing the tours, a lot of people, they say, I came for the cherry blossoms and they came a bit too early. And then the other half, they come a bit too late. It's very difficult to time because when the cherry blossoms bloom, it's really like only a week or 10 days. So it's a bit of a gamble. And it's difficult to time them. But early spring when the cherry blossoms come until, I would say, rainy season, which is about now. So spring is really nice, very reasonable weather. And the other beautiful time of year is autumn.
Yeah.
I wouldn't recommend coming in summer. Summer is kind of hell on earth. 3-4 years ago in Kyoto, we had 2 weeks in the summer where it didn't get below 38 degrees centigrade, even at night time. And it's just hell. I mean, you have a shower, you put on fresh clothes, you walk out, you're immediately drenched in your own sweat. It's not pleasant. So I wouldn't recommend summer. But yeah, spring and autumn are definitely the best times to come. And one difference between spring and autumn: in spring you get the cherry blossoms, but like I said, it's very short, a week or 10 days. Autumn's kind of nice in that the leaves changing, it's more like a month. So you've got much more chance of seeing the beautiful autumn or fall leaves.
Oh, I didn't know that. So the fall leaves it's more spread out.
Yeah, it's kind of late October, maybe late October, early November. It's more like a month, I'd say, yeah.
Let's talk about food, my favorite topic, as you can see. Food in Kyoto. So, you know, the last time I went to Kyoto, it's like, I mean, they've got everything. What don't they have?
Okay, well, food is really good in Kyoto. Well, you know, one of the things I love about Japan is the food. Food
anywhere.
Everywhere in Japan
anywhere
is really good. And you don't have to spend a lot of money. You know, you can eat really well for, like, some of the chain restaurants are really good here. You know, you can eat really well for $10. But, so you can get all the usual stuff that you can get everywhere in Japan, you can get in Kyoto. For example, okonomiyaki, unagi, which is eel, I really like eel, ramen, udon, soba, tempura, sushi. Like, all that stuff is really good. Although I'd say that all that stuff isn't particularly Kyoto. That's kind of... That's all Japan.
Standard Japanese fare.
Yeah, but all that stuff is really good in Kyoto.
Right.
Kyoto is known for tofu. There's lots of tofu places. Kyoto is also known for something called yuba. Now, I've lived in Japan a long time and I'm a bit weird and I really like yuba. What is yuba? Maybe for foreigners, yuba is not the most exciting thing. It's basically tofu byproduct. You know, in the West, when we make hot milk, you boil up some milk, it develops a skin on top. We usually throw away the skin and drink the hot milk. Same deal with tofu. When you make tofu, it develops a skin. In Kyoto, they don't throw away the skin. They make this byproduct called yuba. And, you know, you put it in your miso soup, you put it on your rice. Now, like I said, you know, I've lived here a long time. It's a bit of an acquired taste. I would say it's got a really nice, subtle taste. When I make my friends who visit from abroad eat it, 99% of the time it's bland and it tastes of nothing. Just to warn you.
Yeah.
So maybe not the most exciting thing for foreigners, but that's one of the specialities. Yuba is one of the specialities of Kyoto.
So there's a famous tofu restaurant in Tokyo called Sorano. It's located in Ebis. They've actually got two restaurants, one in Shibuya, one in next door in Ebis. And they specialize in tofu dishes, including yuba. And it's just, I personally think it's like really delicious because it's very, very subtle. It's really good. Now, being an idiot, I didn't realize that tofu, a lot of the tofu dishes have dashi in them.
So what is dashi? What's the ingredient?
Dashi is basically
the fish stock.
It's basically fish stock. And so I had some friends visiting from Australia and they're all vegan. And so being dum-dum here.
Being an insensitive idiot.
Being an insensitive, ignorant idiot, as you all know, dear listeners, I invited them to the tofu restaurant where we found out, or I found out, much to my horror.
Everything is drenched in dashi.
Everything is drenched in dashi. And my friends are vegan, so that was a no-no. But luckily, my fairy godmother was looking down on us and we managed to find a vegan restaurant around the corner. Just pure luck. But if you are vegan, just be careful. There is dashi in the tofu. If you're not vegan or you're a maybe slightly less strict vegetarian, I highly recommend you eat the tofu. Many of you may think, why, what's the big deal? But it's very, very subtle. It's great. Yeah. I highly recommend it.
Yeah, just the other thing to mention about fish in Japan, because of Buddhism for a long time, in Buddhism, killing animals is bad karma. So meat was kind of frowned upon, but fish wasn't considered meat. And lots of Japanese still, you say, like, I'm a vegetarian, they're like, how about this fish? That's the kind of attitude to...
Well, I mean, fish, it's the swimming vegetable.
As a fish friend, I'm terribly insulted.
Oh, the poor cows. Oh, the poor pigs. What about the fish? Oh, well, they know what they did.
Yes. Now, I was saying, if you're coming to Japan for Wagyu and Kobe beef, Yuba may not be up your street. However, one famous snack that's popular in Kyoto is Yuba cheese. It's East meets West. It's Yuba and cheese. And I would say, having the cheese in it makes it a bit more
palatable
for the Western palate. Yuba cheese, you can find that. There's a place selling it outside Kiyomizu Temple, and on the other side of Kyoto in Adachiyama, on the main drag there, they've got a place selling Yuba cheese. It's a popular snack.
My recommendation is to try some of the stall food that you'll encounter when you're walking through Kyoto. There's a lot of places to try small snacks and things. They're not necessarily traditional Kyoto food, but they're great.
And Nishiki Market in Kyoto is a good place where you can try lots of those kind of stuff. Nishiki Market, not really a market, it's more like a covered shopping street. But the kind of downside of Nishiki Market is very, very crowded. And it closes early, about 5 o'clock, so people go there in the evening, it's all closed. But lots of places to try kind of free samples of stuff, and lots of weird and wonderful Japanese food along Nishiki Market in Kyoto. That's a good place.
Sounds amazing.
Not limited to Kyoto, you'll find all over Japan, is kaiseki.
Oh yeah, kaiseki.
Kaiseki is very fancy Japanese food. It's usually multiple courses, very beautifully presented. And I personally, I think tastes very good as well. Usually very expensive. So it's not a Kyoto thing, but Kyoto has a lot of kaiseki restaurants. I'd say the cheaper lunch set for kaiseki is about $100 a head. Evening kaiseki dori can be as much as $400 or $500 per head. Yeah.
Wow.
So, if you're doing something, if you've got some kind of anniversary, birthday, it's a nice story. And usually kaiseki is in very nice traditional surroundings, tatami mats and maybe a view of a garden and stuff. So nice. You can't get cheap kaiseki. The whole point is it's expensive. Another thing you find in Kyoto is shojin rori.
That's my favorite. I love shojin rori. Ben, what is shojin rori?
What is shojin rori? Shojin rori is Japanese Buddhist vegetarian cuisine.
It's the best. And I guess this...
How the West were doing like vegan sausages and vegan burgers. Japan was doing this hundreds of years ago because of the influence of Buddhism. Killing animals is bad karma. So and they do a lot of ganmodoki, mock goose.
Ganmodoki,
mock goose.
Oh wow.
But they all that kind of tofu trying to imitate meat. And it's really not. I love shojin rori. Can be a bit pricey.
It's expensive. It's definitely expensive.
There's a place in North Kyoto, there's a very nice temple called Kurama. In North Kyoto, and there's a shojin rori place there. I think it's about $50 a head for a short journey.
Not bad. $50
yeah,
is
yeah, it's a little pricey, you know, but yeah. Another thing, Kyoto sweets. So they do all the kind of traditional sweets. And the other thing, we kind of mentioned tofu before, but yudofu.
Oh yeah.
And you'll often find what is yudofu? Yudofu is tofu boiled in hot water with vegetables. So it's usually served to you. Mm. It's kind of like, it's like a soup with tofu and vegetables. Again, it's vegetarian, and you'll often find a lot of yudofu restaurants around temples because, you know, temples are Buddhist and eating animals is bad. For example, around, if you go to a temple called Nanzenji, there's a few yudofu places around. Again, yudofu is really nice. So it's a...
Holy moly, you know your food.
And there's, and if you want a break, there's always McDonald's and Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Oh, I don't know about this cuisine that's 400 years old that is based on Buddhist sentiment, but you know, oh, I could kill a Big Mac.
There's also Mos Burger. Actually, Mos Burger recently, they launched, I really like it, they launched a vegan burger, Shifudo Burger.
Shifudo Burger. So yeah. Seafood burger,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so it's it's kind of, it tastes like a fish fillet, but it's right. But it's vegan. It's good. I really like it. And they give you a big lump of tartar sauce to put on it, which is, yeah.
When you live in Japan and you don't eat fish, Japanese people will say to you, what's wrong with you? Why aren't you eating fish?
Yes.
Fish, or, I mean, obviously there is the Buddhist influence, but in modern Japan, I guess this goes back to the Jomon era, you know, Japanese have been eating fish since the year zero.
It's an island nation.
It's an island nation, and they are a
like the
nation.
British.
Although
they found, like the British found fish and chips in the ocean, but the Japanese didn't find their chips.
They didn't find their chips. But it's interesting that Japan and England are both island countries, and Japan is
Shimaguni,
and Japan is completely obsessed with fish. They have sushi, and they make the most incredible seafood dishes.
Don't forget sashimi.
Sashimi as well. And England is not what I would... It's not the first place I would imagine when you say seafood.
How dare you?
I'm sorry. That was...
I think fish used to be cheaper.
Yeah, right. But isn't like in... So traditionally in England, when you have fish and chips, it's cod and chips.
Yeah.
But because we've destroyed the North Sea, there aren't any cod left, right? And so I think cod is incredibly expensive now in the UK. Well, listen, that was entertaining, educational.
Did it educate your head?
It educated my head.
It was educational.
It was educational. I am more enlightened than I was before. Now, here's a question, Ben. If people would like to avail themselves of your tours, should we stick, what we'll do, we'll stick a link,
sure,
on the website,
sure,
and they can click on the link and they can get in touch with you,
sure,
and you can give them a tour of Kyoto.
Sure.
So if you're coming over to Japan, send an email, say hello, and I'll put you in touch with Ben and he'll take you around.
Awesome.
Well, hey, Ben, thank you so much. That was amazing. I learned so much today, all about the food in Kyoto, the, what's it called, Hanamachi,
the flower towns.
The flower towns.
The five flower towns of Kyoto.
The best time of year to visit Kyoto, and just all those.
Don't come in the summer.
Don't come in the summer. It's almost as if you know what you're talking about. That's amazing. That's great. I need to come and hang out with you in Kyoto sometime soon.
Yeah.
Although the next 2 months is definitely a no-no.
Yeah, wait, yeah, come in the autumn.
Come in the autumn. So,
or the fall, as our North American cousins like to say.
As our dear American listeners like to say. I'm going to come in the fall. Absolutely. I haven't been to Kansai and Kyoto in ages, so I'd love to go down. And You know, we should do some kaiseki ryori, definitely.
Yeah, I'm up for some. Let's go to Hyote. I want to have
Hyote.
Hyote do. I think the breakfast set is like $60. But I was looking. They do. I think a porridge. Porridge in Japan means rice porridge. Mm. Porridge and quail eggs. I think it's $160 a head.
Oh,
but
gosh,
I might save up. I want to do that once.
Let's do it. You only live once, or as the Buddhists say, endlessly reincarnated until you become enlightened. But yeah,
you only live thousands of times.
Yes, until we leave the cycle of reincarnation. But what I'm trying to say is, visit Kyoto, will you, people? Anyway, Ben, thank you so much. That was amazing. I'm totally looking forward to hanging out in Kyoto again. Big shout out to all my friends in Kansai. Minasan genki desu ka? And dear listener, if you have any questions, concerns, or whatever, send me an email at info@learnjapanesepod.com. Don't forget, we have an amazing Discord community with a bunch of wonderful people having interesting conversations, learning about Japan, learning Japanese, and you can find all of that good stuff at learnjapanesepod.com. Just click on the relevant links. We shall see you soon. Keep studying Japanese. Arigatou gozaimasu. Matta ne.
See you. Thank you for listening.